The last couple of weeks we've been talking about equality. 2 weeks ago we talked about Black Lives Matter and racial equality. Last week we talked about the equality of women with men. About 10 years ago, I'm not sure when it was, I attended a conversation with a diverse group of people here in Seattle, and a question was posed to the group. We knew this was the question that would be asked of the group as we gathered. And that was about what was the most marginalized group in the society today. And I, given our cultural things that are happening in society today, I expected that they would say that the most oppressed people group would be something about the gay and lesbian community. But to my surprise, the very strong conviction among those people that were gathered was that the most oppressed people today are the poor. That they are particularly held down by the oppression, by systemic cultural oppression that holds people in poverty in ways that we often don't think about. And That really kind of struck deep with me because it wasn't an answer that I expected. When we talk about the poor, I often hear this verse that quotes Jesus as saying, "For you always will have the poor with you, but you will not always have me." In fact, I heard that within the last couple of weeks. Somebody said, "Yeah, I know, we'll always have the poor with us," and went on to say, you know, it's as if to say, well, yes, poverty is a problem, but you got to live with it. It just is what it is. And that's kind of the facts. I think that really misses the point of that scripture, because that isn't what Jesus was saying. A woman had come with a very costly alabaster jar of ointment to anoint Jesus. And it was at a home. And the disciples were really angry about this waste. I mean, how dare she use this incredibly expensive alabaster perfume oil and just pour it on Jesus? I mean, they could have used the money to feed the poor, to do something with real the redeeming value. And Jesus, in his response, is really honoring the woman's good service. And he's not making a statement about poverty, judgment that we just have to learn to live with poverty. He's simply honoring the woman's service to him and that she anointed him in preparation for his burial. The idea of living with poor as a normal part of society is in contrast to God's system, to God's economic system. We find in Leviticus 25, God's Jubilee system. In 49 years, the land would be returned to the original owners, and there was no one family that could amass great wealth and land long term, particularly not at the permanent expense of others and leaving others with nothing. The Jubilee system said, "You will work 6 days and rest on the seventh." Now that was a pretty, in and of itself, that one thing of resting for 1 day a week was a pretty outlandish thing in the society of those days. Not something that others did. You just got to keep working. And the expectation was for the common people that they would just work every day and work hard. So to take a day, a Sabbath day, apart from the work week, was unique in and of itself. But he goes on and says, "You'll work 6 years and take a sabbatical year, a year off." Now, our colleges and universities attempt to do something like that, but not most other professions. Yeah, that'd be nice, right? Jubilee year was after a week of sabbatical years, or 49 years. So during the sabbatical year, or the Sabbath year, the land was given a vacation and nothing was planted. They just let it go fallow and they didn't keep planting things and keeping it going. They did allow volunteer plants to come up, and those were to be given to the poor so that people that didn't have would have enough. It was also a year of respite in an agricultural society where there's always more work to do, always tilling the land, always getting ready for harvest, always harvesting, then tilling the land, then planting. You know, it's a year-round kind of process. And there may be some slower times, but it's a fairly constant thing. The other thing that happened was that debts were forgiven. In the Jubilee year, so every 49 years, the slaves were released. Now, most slaves in those days were people that couldn't pay off their debts, and so they were thrown into debtor's prison. You can't pay off your debt, we'll put you in slavery or some kind of way, just be, you know, to you're indentured, so to speak. So those were released every 49 years. It wasn't a permanent thing. You got released. Debts were erased, and most debts were charitable loans to needy persons, and actually they couldn't charge interest to other Hebrews. That was something that they were prohibited from doing, was charging interest. But those debts were all erased, just completely wiped out, and you got a fresh start. I mean, a really fresh start. Can you imagine? Goodbye school loans, goodbye mortgage. I mean, we live with debt. And society is organized differently, but still, to be able to have a fresh start for people that don't have enough would be huge. Then, as if that wouldn't be enough, in that Jubilee year, the land itself was returned to the original occupants from 49 years earlier. So you could get new property. You could, and much of that was done in, again, in the collection of debts and the wealth that was spread around. So you could get new property, but at the end of 49 years, it reverted back to the original owners. That really maintained the original pattern of land ownership that was given when the 12 tribes settled the promised land. And it prevented anyone from permanently controlling land, especially large amounts of land, at the expense of the poor. So again, that's mind-boggling to think of, that every 49 years the land would return to the original landowners. The entire heart of God is for equitable distribution of wealth. God just reset it all periodically, that it couldn't get out of bounds. Interesting to note that the inscription on the Liberty Bell says that to, quote-unquote, proclaim liberty throughout the land. Now, it's interesting to note where that quote on the Liberty Bell comes from. It comes from Leviticus 25, which is the chapter that talks about this system of Jubilee. The 25th chapter, the 10th verse, says, "And you shall hallow the 50th year, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. You shall return, every one of you, to your property, and every one of you to your family." So it really talks about is a design to promote economic liberty and self-sustenance for all people, no matter how poor. Interesting that that's what's on our Liberty Bell, and yet we clearly take it out of context. We don't think about a way to be sustainable as people everywhere, and about the good of the whole, the good of everyone. We think about it as freedom from some other kind of a dictator oppression kind of oppression, rather than this self-sustaining ability for us to live in society and live well together. We hear it all the time, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. We hear it so often that I don't think we really have a sense of what it really means. The truth is that the richest 1% of the United States hold 40% of the wealth in our country. 1% of the people hold 40% of the wealth. And 14.5% of the U.S. population is officially poor. And God says, this is not justice. God's heart is for equitable distribution of wealth. This Jubilee system in the Old Testament, a way to help everyone be self-sustaining and be able to live well in our world. In the New Covenant, there's no mandate about how to equitably distribute the wealth. It could be by a system of capitalism, or communism, or socialism, or tribalism, or feudalism, or any other economic system. Any economic system that's done fairly, the emphasis on the fairly, it must provide for everyone. And all of those economic systems have their Achilles heel. They have their place where they fall apart, their way that they can go too far in any one direction to the detriment of the good of the whole. Capitalism is okay, but we have to be careful with the disadvantaged if we live in a capitalist society. In other words, if there are winners and losers, which there are in a capitalist society, how do we provide quality of life and sustenance for the loser? God says that we have to be attentive to the least of these, to think about the least of these. And God says no to unfair practices, to worker exploitation for profit, human slavery for sex or for labor. The truth is that some of the problem with immigrant labor is that people sell their children to the U.S. to come so that they can make it in other countries. People that don't have enough money that literally sell their children for sex trafficking or for labor, indentured servants to work as a nanny in a home, all kinds of ways. It is sad, but it's true, and it plays into this economic system that is broken and doesn't take care of the least of these. They're sold for sex or for cheap labor. And we read stories, we're pretty aghast when we read stories about someone that was kept in an impoverished situation and forced to work hard, and yet it continues in 2016 in our society. We also talk about or have unfair practices that are said to be just normal business. It's what you do. Subprime mortgages that we just charge much higher interest rates, and the banks are the ones that make it. Predatory lending. God even said no to charging interest to fellow citizens. The loans were made in those days to help the poor, so they weren't allowed to charge interest because it was a way of helping out people that didn't have enough. Interest in the Old Testament was only charged to foreigners, and those were usually in business deals. The truth in our society, instead of the poor getting an interest-free loan to help them out when they're in a difficult place, poor people pay a higher interest rate, a much higher interest rate. The more money you have, the cheaper your interest rate is. That's kind of backwards from what God said. Large grocery stores are not built in poor areas of town. And when they do, the prices are usually higher. Health insurance. Even with the Affordable Health Care Act, not everyone has health insurance. And there's this huge pushback against the system that we do have in our country. Any kind of health care for everyone, and we declare it socialism. The problem is that stops the conversation, and we don't think rationally beyond that. We have to find a way to continue this conversation, to sit down and rationally talk about if this, then, you know, how can we do this rather than throw labels at someone else and judgments and end the conversation. That doesn't get us anywhere. Banks know how to cut down on bankruptcy. Don't do things that you do. But, you know, the truth is banks make their money on all the fees that they charge. And the more you owe and the more you get behind and the more you struggle, the more fees they charge. And it gets kind of out of control. Even when we send college students off to college, we entice them with credit cards, knowing that they may not be able to pay those off and they don't even realize what they're getting into, but the banks will make up that what they'll lose on all the fees that they will charge. Our mandate is to make systemic arrangements for the have-nots, for the losers, for the poor in our society. It wasn't the job of the temple in the Old Testament. It wasn't the job of the synagogues or the temple to take care of people. Rather, that was laid on the whole of society. So it's really a fallacy that society can get rich and the church will take care of the poor. And yet that's what we often hear. The church, it's their job to take care of the poor. But you know, friends, the truth is we can't do it. I know we couldn't take care of the poor on this one block that we live on, only one block. We could not take care of the poor that live right around us. We're generous, but we don't have enough money to simply take care of the poor. God said this must be done through the governance of society. And there must be a way to think about how to take care of those that are losers in our economic systems. In Matthew 25, 31 to 46, we read about the judgment of the nations and the separation of the sheep and the goats. And we often assume that this is really a personal sorting and judgment. It's the personal, are you a sheep or a goat, and kind of the sorting out of individuals. But it's not about that. The basis of judgment of the nation is talked about here. And the judgment of the nation is the care for the least of these. Are you the nation that cared for the least of these? And the nation that says, when did we care for the least of these? When you housed me, when you fed me, when you took care of me, when you welcomed me into your society. So that it's not simply on the individual. It's a judgment of the nations that don't care for the least of these, that don't care for the poor, that don't care for those that are disenfranchised in their society. I mentioned the credit cards for freshmen in college that are lucrative for the bank. And, you know, we excuse ourselves by saying, well, they should know better. And we blame the people who accepted and used them. But God blames the people that make them so available. Buying cars, the entire system is set up to make you pay as much as they can get out of you. I hate buying cars. I hate the feeling that just because I'm a single woman, I'm going to pay a whole lot more for this car than somebody else that's, you know, and I think I'm kind of savvy, but it's a rigged system. I don't like it. The more innocent you are, the more you pay. Quakers, on the other hand, were known for fair pricing. They said a child should be able to go to the store and not be taken advantage of. Before that, it was common that you bought things in any store on the barter system. And Quakers used set prices. People said it would be their financial demise, that it would be the end of the business. And the truth is they prospered because people knew exactly what they were going to pay. And it didn't matter who you were. It's appropriate to have a fair price for the business owner to be able to sell things at a fair price. But it's not appropriate to have it go up and down depending on how vulnerable you are. And it goes up the more vulnerable you are. I think we need fair pricing in buying cars. Quakers were known for using fair measurements and weights, and their honesty of dealings, which were binding on the buyer and seller. So Quakers had a new thing here that was a big deal. You often, if you read the fine print of a contract these days, it'll often say, subject to change without notice. And the change comes through and we say, how did I didn't read that. Yeah, well, it was in there. The poor. Another thing we do is that we say, all the poor can pull themselves up with their bootstraps. You heard that? Poor can just pull themselves up with the bootstraps. In the 1800s, I know it's interesting, it's a little history. In the 1800s, that was an example of an impossible task. Think about it. Can you pull yourself up with your bootstraps? You got the bootstraps here and you're I mean, when you think about it, you're going to pull yourself up to standing with your boot. That, it doesn't make sense. It's not something you can do. But by 1922, it was a metaphor meaning to better oneself by one's own unaided efforts. That without the help of anyone else, that you could better yourself. If you can't get up and you're going to use your bootstraps to get you, that's just, that doesn't work. It is an impossible thing. It doesn't even make sense. In fact, no one even knows the source of that idiom, where it came from and how it got to mean that you would better yourself by your own unaided efforts. The truth is, it doesn't make sense, and it is not scriptural. Working minimum wage jobs. It used to be true that you started at the bottom and worked up. But real upward mobility doesn't happen at McDonald's. Yes, maybe for one or two, but not very many people can get ahead. For unskilled people, the primary way to increase income is to work two or three jobs. And often those jobs are held at part-time with split shifts, so there are no benefits because it's better for the employer and they don't have to pay as much money. The factory and industry jobs are disappearing. Those places where unskilled people used to work, the mills, the assembly lines, that kind of thing. Now the majority of unskilled labor is in the service industry. The service industry has a much lower rate of pay. To work at a minimum wage job, go to school at the same time to improve your skills, and raise your children is an overwhelming task. Yeah, there's miracle stories. There are stories about someone who was able to do that. Work at a minimum wage job, go to school, improve themselves. But I think the truth is you got to be a superman or a superwoman in order to do that. It's pretty difficult to get ahead in that way. Our economic system is not built on truth, but on sand. I think of that children's song about when you build on sand, the rains come and the floods come and the house goes smash. Our current economic system doesn't make it in God's eyes, and it doesn't work. And we're living today the consequences of business not done in truth. Yes, we will always have the poor with us because our economic systems hold them poor. So where do we go from here? What do we do about this sad and sorry state of affairs? And I think it begins with repentance. With saying, oh God, we are so sorry. We're so sorry for participating in an economic system that holds people in poverty. We begin by turning around and getting our own houses in order. That we do that what we need to do to get things straightened around. And if we've wronged someone, if we've done economic harm against another one, to go and fix it. Think of Zacchaeus who, when Jesus went to his house as a tax collector and realizing what he had done wrong, he paid back the money multiple times over. If I have held to a wrong philosophy, then I need to change it. If I've felt like the poor just could They just need to work harder. And if I have believed that, I need to allow God to shift things and change my mind, and I find ways to move in a new direction. If I've borrowed beyond my ability, I repent and change and work to set my finances right. And if I've said the poor can just help themselves and judge them unfairly, I need to change what I say and recognize that people caught in poverty are held in poverty in ways that are held there by our systems, and it's not a good thing. And it's very difficult to get out of. I need to recognize and admit my prejudices against the poor. To recognize that they are loved by God. That they are human beings, that they have value in this world, that they have voice, and that we need to work together to figure out how it is that we can right these economic injustices. And to remember that God's economic system is one of Jubilee, and that from Leviticus 25:10, that we declare that we shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants, that everyone might find way to live as a whole person in our society, and that we might work to figure out a way to take care of the least of these. The ones that Jesus said, when you entertain the least of these, you entertain me. When you welcome the least of these, you welcome me. When you feed the least of these, you feed me. And so, as we choose to follow Jesus and live like Christ, we too must find ways to care for the least of these. Let's wait in open worship, inviting God to speak directly to us. God's truth for us this morning.